Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's, excuse me. Let's begin. I have a couple of extra sheets over here. Does anyone need? Everyone has? Okay, the extras over here also? Okay, good. Thank you. All right, so this week we find ourselves in Kapitel Lamed Dalet. So chapter 34 in Tehillim. So we're going to do something a little bit different in this particular shiur, in that we're going to place a lot more emphasis on the historical background. You know, we always try to understand what's happening in David HaMelech's life whenever he writes a particular kapitel. But as we're going to see, this is one of the kapitlach where we actually have explicit information about the events that surrounded the creation of this particular chapter and what exactly was happening in David's life. So we're going to really devote a good part of the shiur today to that historical background. But of course, through that historical background, we'll also begin to understand some of the meaning that David HaMelech is trying to convey. So let's take a quick look at the kapitel. Le David, Bishanoso es tamolif navi melech, vaigashur vaelech. So literally of David, when he disguised his sanity before Avimelech, whereupon he drove him out and he departed. So already, what is unique about this kapitel? It's telling us exactly what happened. Remember, we have never seen really a kapitel like this before, where the opening phrase literally is telling us what exactly is happening in David HaMelech's life. Now, we don't know exactly what this is referring to. David HaMelech is disguising his sanity. Who is Avimelech? We don't seem to have any type of, we don't have any recorded interaction between King David and a man by the name of Avimelech. We have an interaction between King David and a man named Achimelech, which we will discuss, but no Avimelech. So of course, intriguing enough, we're already given the historical context, but we're a little bit clueless about what event David HaMelech is referring to. So he goes on, we'll just read a few psukim. Avracha es Hashem mecholis, tamid tilaso b'fi. I will bless God at all times. His praise is always in my mouth. Bahashem tishal nafshi yishmu anavim v'yismachu. My soul boasts of the Lord. May the humble hear and rejoice. Gadlu Hashem iti. Declare the greatness of God along with me. Unuromima shemo yachdov. And let us exalt his name together. Darashti as Hashem va'anoni. I sought out God, and he answered me. Mikol migorosai hitziloni. And he delivered me from all of my terrors. He beat to a love in a haru. Upneihem ufneihem al yech paru. They looked to him. I'm sorry. And he became radiant. And their faces will not be ashamed. One more pasuk. Za'ani kara v'ashem shamea u'mikol tsarasav hoshia. This poor man called out and the Lord heard and he saved him from all his troubles. So again, we haven't read through the whole kapitel, but based on the first seven psukim, based on the first seven verses, what is the theme of this particular chapter? Good. Say, really, salvation from difficulties. Kadosh Baruch Hu, I had problems. Kadosh Baruch Hu, I had difficulties. All types of difficulties, b'chol eis, all intervals of life. And whenever I encounter difficulties, God, you were always there for me. Again, a common theme that we have found throughout Sefer Tehillim. You know, we took a little bit of a break in Kapitel Lamed Gimel, Ranenu Tzadikim Ba'Hashem. So that was a little bit of a different type of upbeat kapitel, but it seemed not, and this is upbeat also, because at the end of the day, David HaMelech is always optimistic about the salvation of God. So that seems to be the genuine, again, we're not going to read the rest of Psukim now, we'll do it in coming Shiurim, but that is the ongoing theme. Whenever I've been in trouble personally, or whenever man is in trouble globally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you are always there. You take care of the downtrodden, you take care of the oppressed, you, God, always come through. So let's, however, take a look at Rashi in number two. So what Rashi picks up on, oh, thank you very much, thank you. Will it bother you if I put this down over here? Okay, good, thank you. So now, Rashi is bothered by the same thing we're bothered by, which is, who is Avimelech? Because remember, like I said, we're going to focus a little bit more on the circumstances surrounding this capital. So Rashi says, Lithne Avimelech. Now again, remember, now I am a wonderful product of the yeshiva system, so I don't know Navi. So the fact that I don't recognize Avimelech, so it's not such a surprise. But you ladies, I'm sure, are well versed in Tanakh. So again, you'll notice, even if you read through Tanakh, you'll notice that again, like I said before, we do not have an interaction between King David and Avimelech. So Rashi's bothered by this. Who is this Avimelech? Kach kol malchi plishtim nikroim. Oh, Rashi's Avimelech is not the name of a particular monarch. Avimelech is a generic name for Philistine rulers. The same way, v'chol malchi mitzrayim paro. The same way that all kings of Egypt are called Pharaoh, all kings, all Philistine kings, all Plishti kings are called Avimelech, which is so interesting, because based on this Rashi now, we have a new understanding of course, the entire episode with Yitzchak and Rivka in Gerar. Because there we are told about Avimelech, so according to Rashi, maybe his name was Avimelech. It could be that he was perhaps the first Philistine ruler, maybe that's where all the other rulers got the name from, but in any event, Rashi says, Avimelech is a generic name for Philistine rulers. V'ch'af apish shmo achish, korin lo Avimelech. And even though his name was Achish, and now we get a clue as to what's going on over here, even though his real name was Achish, nevertheless, he was simply known as Avimelech, his generic Philistine monarchical title. Alshich says in number 3, the David b'shanaso as tamo, same thing. Hine Achish hayashmo. His name was Achish, the king, who David HaMelech, who the capital is referring to, his name was Achish. Ach echshav yomar, ki bechlama sheshine as tamo, haya omro shahaya lifnei Avimelech. Shekina es Achish b'shem Avimelech zikno. According to the Alshich, we're going to see that David HaMelech puts on a little bit of a display of insanity, and we'll discuss why that is. But in his display of insanity, he calls King Achish Avimelech. Who was Avimelech to Achish? It was his Zayda. It was his great whatever number grandfather. Again, the Avimelech referred to in Sefer Bereishis that we just had in Gerar, that is the great grandfather of King Achish. So we have two different understandings over here. But one thing is clear, that the king with whom David HaMelech had this particular interaction that we are about to describe, his name was not Avimelech. Either according to Rashi, Avimelech is just a generic name for Philistine rulers, or according to the Alshich, David HaMelech was calling this present monarch by the name of his grandfather. Either way, everyone agrees that the monarch to which the capital refers is the monarch known as Avimelech. Excuse me, is known as Achish. Thank you. So take a look at number 4. So let's do a little bit of historical background here and try to see a little bit about what is happening in this capital. So we're going to spend a good few moments just developing the storyline, because to take you right to Achish will not do service to what David HaMelech is trying to convey here. Look at number 4. Vayavo David Nova. So a little bit of background to our background, which, remember again, David HaMelech quickly rises through the ranks of Shaul's army through the first act of killing Goliath. That was the beginning of King David's upward trajectory. He quickly rises through the ranks of the army. He marries the king's daughter. Now, of course, interestingly enough, what happens? David HaMelech transitions from being the king's right-hand man and closest confidant to what? To ultimately the king, Shaul, viewing him as a threat to the throne. Does David HaMelech have any monarchical aspirations? Absolutely not. Even when David becomes king, he doesn't want to be king. All the more so when he was just a soldier. He was more than happy to just go ahead and be that particular soldier. Remember, we always say he always wanted to be the shepherd, but he has no monarchical aspirations.
Wasn't he already anointed by that time?
But he didn't want to be the king.
Right, but he knew he was going to be.
But he didn't want to be the king, right? There are plenty of things we have to do in life. It doesn't mean I want to do it. So David HaMelech knows he has no choice. He's going to have to be the king, and we'll talk about that, but he doesn't want to be the king. So Shaul, again, realized, remember, Shaul is, it's not our topic for today, but the story of Shaul is a terribly tragic story, because the story of Shaul is a great man who just totally unravels, and instead of taking responsibility and owning his mistakes, he chooses to blame it on everyone else. Remember again, Shmuel told Shaul that he's going to lose the monarchy. Why? Because he failed to comply with God's directive to wipe out Amalek. Shaul was given the charge to wipe out Amalek. He spares the women, spares the children, spares the livestock, and as a result, Amalek is able to perpetuate. And Shaul is told that as a result of that trespass, the monarchy will be taken from him. From that point on, Shaul becomes exceptionally suspicious of anyone who he feels is more beloved by the people than he. So again, and the tragedy of it is, instead of just owning his mistakes, taking responsibility, doing tshuva, he couldn't reverse the circumstances. He was not going to hold on to the monarchy, but he could have died a righteous man. Instead, he really dies being an incredibly suspicious and individual who really undermined not only his own personal interests, but the national interests as well. In any event, David HaMelech chooses not to fight his father-in-law. Now understand, he chooses not to fight his father-in-law because there is one thing he is trying to avoid, which is civil war. Right? He does not want civil war. He realizes that if he takes up arms, especially if he declares the fact that he has been anointed by God, he has been anointed by Shmuel, the truth is the majority of people would probably side with him, but in any event, it would be a civil war. So David HaMelech decides, I'm not fighting, I'm just going to flee. So where does he go? Now, number four, we're going to do this quickly. Vayavo David Nove, El Achimelech HaKohen. So who does he come to? He comes to the city of Nov. Now, Nov was a very unique city, because Nov was known as Ir Kohanim. You know, it's interesting. You know, the Gemara Maseches Megillah discusses the laws of Dochanim, the laws of the priestly blessing. And so the Gemara there discusses what happens if you have a city of all Kohanim. What do you do for Birchas Kohanim? What do you do for the priestly blessing, for Duchening, if it's all Kohanim? So just, we know historically, there were cities that were all Kohanim. Nov was one of those cities. David runs to Nov, El Achimelech HaKohen, Achimelech who was... He wasn't the high priest, he was not the Kohen Gadol, but he was in charge of the city of Nov. Vayecharad Achimelech likras David, vayomer lo madua ato levadecho, ve'ein ish imach, ein ish itach. Achimelech senses something is up, because David is traveling alone. David would never travel alone. Besides the fact that he is the son-in-law of the king, he's also one of the most prominent and powerful generals in the entire army. Where is your entourage? Achimelech realizes that something is up. The Malbim writes in number 5, Madua ata levadecha, shimholich bitzarchei amelchama ayei tzava. If you're on a military mission, where is the army? Ve'im b'shlichos hamelech, and if you're on an agency from the king, ayei na'arav mishar sav. Where are your attendants? Number 6. Vayordon l'achimelech hakoin. Hamelech tzivani davar. Vayomre alai ish al yedamu uma es hadavar shanochi sholechecha. Vasher tzivisicha v'asanar miyodati el mekom ploni almoni. So what does David essentially tell Achimelech? I am on a top secret mission. So secret that no one can know about it. So secret that I couldn't take anyone with me. So secret that I have to just simply execute it on my own. That's why I have no provisions with me. I have no people with me. Top secret mission from the king. Number 7. V'ata mayish tachas yadcha. So now, remember, David says, it was so secret that I couldn't pack up for the journey. So tell me, what provisions do you have here? Tenei biyadi anemtza. Do you have 5 loaves of bread? Vayar nakoin al David. Vayomer ein lechem chol al tachas yadi. Ki im lechem kodesh im yesh nishmur an arim ach meisha. So he says over here, again, I have essentially sanctified sacred items. Because remember, this is a city of Kohanim. Which means, what do they have? They have lechem aponim. They have truma. They have meiser. They have all kinds of things. But everything is kodesh. Without getting into the details of how he could give David something that's kodesh, we're not going to get into that today. But he said, as long as you're in a state of ritual purity, then ultimately I have stuff for you to give. Number 8, Vayitin lo akoin kodesh, kilo haya sham, lechem, ki im lechem aponim, amusarim mifle Hashem, losum lechem chom yomi lakho. Okay, so he gives him lechem aponim. I'm just going quickly. I include a lot of information just to give you context. Number 9, Visham ish avde me avde shal bayomahu, ne'etzar lifne Hashem, Ushmo doek ha'adomi abir ha'roem asher l'shol. Who is in the city of Nov on that particular day? A man by the name of Doeg Ha'adomi. Who is Doeg Ha'adomi? So the Navi identifies him as, he's one of Shaul's servants. That's interesting the way they identify him. He is Abir Haroim, the chief of the shepherds for Shaul. Now, what does that mean? Number 9. So Rashi says over here, Abir Haroim, second line in number 10, Abir Haroim, Av Bezdin. Av Bezdin. So the head of the shepherds is not a literal statement, but rather, again, it's a metaphor for, he was, the Jewish leaders are called shepherds of the Jewish people. He was the head shepherd. So Doeg is one of Shaul's highest ranking individuals. Number 12, Abir Haroim, Godol Umamuna Aroi Mikne HaMelech. So okay, the Mitzvah Sava takes a literal interpretation that he's in charge of all the king's flock. So the truth is, whether you say that he is the Av Basin, the head of Shaul's court, or he is the head of Shaul's flock, either way, the common denominator is, he's powerful and he's influential. So now understand how this story is unfolding. So now you have David coming to Achimelech for provisions, saying that he's on a secret mission. Now remember, you know, in Nov, that no one knows what's going on. No one knows. Remember that Shaul has already tried to kill David. Remember, because Shaul's keeping that quiet, because he's not a fool. He realizes that David is probably more popular than he is. David is not mentioning it because he does not want to start civil war. So pretty much no one besides David, Shaul, and remember, there's one more person who is Michal, David's wife, knows about this because she helped him escape. She chose, in this situation, her husband over her father. That changes later on. But right now, she chooses her husband over her father. No one else knows. Except, of course, for Doeg. So Doeg, who's one of Shaul's most trusted advisors, knows that David is running from Shaul, or knows that Shaul wants David dead. So Doeg is there, and he sees everything unfolding. Number 13. I actually skipped down to number 14. Vayomer David l'Achimelech. So this is so interesting. So David says to Achimelech, okay, thank you for the food. Tell me, do you have any weapons? Do you have any weapons here? Remember, David HaMelech is saying the mission was so secret that I literally had to leave without anyone realizing that I was even leaving. So I couldn't take provisions, I couldn't take weapons, nothing. Do you have anything here? Chanis Ocherev, Gam Ki Charbi, Vegam Kelai Lovakach Tibiadi, Ki Hoya Devar HaMelech Nachutz. I am on such a secret mission, and it's of such urgency that I had to leave without anything else. Number 15, and here's where the story becomes so incredibly, ironic is the wrong word, but almost like circular. Look what he writes. Vayomer HaKohen, it's a city of Kohanim, right? So the Kohanim, you know, it's interesting, by the way, Kohanim traditionally were not part of the fighting force. But interesting, there's one time in our history where the Kohanim went ahead and led the battle. They were on the front lines. When was that? Hanukkah. That is true. When else? I didn't think about that one, actually. Right, that is true. When else? Chita Egel, that is true. By the Churban. You know, it's interesting that we have kinos that are explicitly all about the Kohanim. And that is because we know that both during the First and Second Temple periods, specifically much more during the Bayis Sheni, it was the Kohanim that fought the Romans to the death. It was the Kohanim that held their line, that held the wall, literally until they died. So it's just interesting. But again, outside of Hanukkah and Churban, Kohanim were not generally part of the fighting force. They had a different role. So David HaMelech asks, do you have like an armory here in Nov that I could take something from? And Achimelech says, listen to this. We only have one sword and one shield here in Nov. And guess who it belongs to? Vayomer HaKohen, number 15. Vayomer HaKohen, Cherev Golyas HaPlishti, Asher Hikisa Be'emek Ha'ela, Hine Hiluta B'Simla Acharei HaEfod, Im Osa Tichlach L'Chokach, Ki Eina Cherev Zulasa Bazeh. So what does Achimelech say to David? There is one sword. We have the sword of Goliath, the sword of Goliath. You understand like the irony here? This is the very sword that David HaMelech claimed for Klal Yisrael just a few years back. And that's the one sword they have in the city of Nov. Why do they have the sword of David in the city of Nov? Interestingly enough, you could see that based on where they placed it. Where did they put it? It's wrapped in a garment behind the ephod. In other words, it's being kept in the Ohel Moed. It's being kept in the Mishkan. Why is it being kept in the Mishkan? Because interestingly, we see a couple of things like this. There are a couple of items that are kept in the Mishkan as a testament to the greatness of God. For example, right, we have the Shivrei Luchos, the broken tablets, the little jar of man, the staff of Aaron that had the budding almonds and the blossoms on it. And included in that thing, what else do they keep in the Ohel Moed? The sword of Goliath, the sword of Goliath, because that was a testament to the strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So amazingly enough, the one sword they have is the sword of Goliath. Achimelech says to David, take it if you want. There's no other sword. Vayomer David, in kamoa tinen alis. David says, nothing like it. Give it to me. Nothing like it. I don't have a choice. So that's the sword we have. That is the sword I will take. And the Radaki number 17 says this quite explicitly. In kamoha, valo Achimelech hayodesh in kamoha, lama amarlo, im osati lefisha haisa ba'ohel moed, lezikaron hanes. They literally kept this sword in Ohel Moed again as a testament, as a reminder to the incredible miracle. Okay, now number 18. Vayakam David, vayivrach bayomahom ipnei Shaul, vayovo el Achish, Melech Gat. So now watch this. So now David HaMelech leaves Nov. Why does he leave Nov? Why does he just camp out in Nov? What's the answer? Right? So remember, first of all, Doeg was there. Now, it's not clear from the text if David HaMelech knew that Doeg was there or not, but the Navi itself tells us. Why does David leave Nov? What does the Pasuk say? Number 18, why does the Pasuk say that he left? He's leaving Nov because, remember, he realizes that as long as he is within territorial Eretz Yisrael, he is within the grasp of Shaul. The only way he could hope to find some level of safety and security is how? To get out, to run to another kingdom. Because again, the king will scour the entire land of Israel to find David, but he's not going to overreach his territorial borders. He's not going to run the risk of igniting war with the Philistines or anyone else who's around for the sake of retrieving David. So if I could just, I got what I needed in Nov, I got some food, I got weapons, and now it's time for me to keep moving, this time again, leaving Eretz Yisrael. We see also how desperate David is to avoid conflict, that literally he's leaving his land. He's leaving Eretz Yisrael, he's leaving his family, he's leaving everything behind. So where does he go? He decides to go to Achish, the king of Gat. Now, Gat, we know, is one of the major... The way the Plishtim, the Philistines, worked is the Philistines had, like, city-states. They had a number of just independent kingdoms, each small kingdom with its own king. So Gat was a major Philistine center, and the king of Gat was a man by the name of Achish. So David goes to Achish, the king of Gat. Okay, look at 21. Mipnei Shaul. So he says, "V'halot mo baruch ella rotz lomar ki ayom ahu baruch lo me'eret Yisrael u'bala al achish shelo yimtzeu shav zeh mipnei shol." So what the Radak is pointing out is, well, it's not really true. He didn't leave. Nov because of Shaul. He left Yerushalayim because of Shaul. But Shaul wasn't chasing him. Shaul wasn't pursuing him now. But rather, says the Radak, everything David HaMelech did was in an effort to run away from King Saul, to run away from Shaul. Because he feels it's just a matter of time until Shaul goes ahead and catches up with him. So he leaves territorial Eretz Yisrael and goes into Gat. 22. Now watch this. So now David HaMelech at this point in time is in Gat. He's in Philistine area. Now, understand, what do the Plishtim think of King David? Well said. They didn't just probably hate him, right? They definitely hated him. Remember, again, there is always ongoing aggression between the Plishtim and the kingdom of Yisrael. There's always ongoing. There are times of treaties, there are times of peace, but we really are sworn enemies. Compound that by the fact that, remember, Goliath was the strongest, most valiant Philistine warrior and was killed by none other than David HaMelech. So listen to the ingredients over here. So David now is going to Gat, which, by the way, was the birth home of Goliath, the birth home of Goliath. And whose sword is he wearing on his side? Goliath's sword. Right? Not the best thought out plan. Right? So he's going out to Gat. But again, he's desperate. He has to get out of Eretz Yisrael. So he goes again to Gat. So what happens? Vayomru avde Achish elav. So now word gets back to King Achish. Halo zed David melech haaretz. You are not going to believe who is here. David. Now look what they call him, by the way. They call him the king of the land. Isn't that interesting? Why do they call him the king of the land? Because the truth is, Shaul wasn't totally crazy. David's popularity had surpassed and eclipsed his own. And so from a military perspective, as strong and valiant of a warrior as Shaul was, Shaul didn't kill Goliath. Shaul was paralyzed in fear in front of Goliath. It was David. So David shows up in Gat, and word gets out, the king of Israel is here. Hello, Zeya Anu b'macholos lemor. It's about him. It's about him that they would go out and they would sing with instruments saying, Hika Shaul ba'alafav. David berivivosav. Shaul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And in fact, that's an exact quote. When they come back after killing Goliath, they throw a parade for David HaMelech. And this is exactly what they said. This is where Shaul begins to turn on David. Shaul is great. He slew thousands. David, tens of thousands. So look at 23. So what's happening over here? Says the Malbim, Halo zed David, chashduhu sheba kimiragel. Now, they wondered, okay, why exactly is David here, Right? Why exactly is he showing up in Gat? So they assume that, why is he here? Why is he here? Spy. To spy. He's here to spy. They're planning an invasion. He's the advanced reconnaissance force. He's here to gather information. They are getting ready to launch an invasion. Because, remember, no one could entertain the possibility that David is actually on the run. Why? Halohu melech ha'aretz. Because in the eyes of the Plishtim, he is the most powerful, influential man in the entire Israel. There is no question. He's not running. He's here to spy. V'ef sheshirach mipnei shaul, ki gadol hu mishaul, im eitzala am shenechshav kimelech etzlam, im itzad gvuraso. So they think maybe he had a falling out with Shaul. But if David had a falling out with Shaul, then who should be on the run? Should be Shaul and not David. So from their perspective, the only reason David is here is to spy. Now, Baal gives a little bit of a background over here. Remember, when David and Goliath fight, remember what was happening. Goliath was coming out every single morning, and he was challenging one valiant soldier from the Jewish army to a fight, right? We know historically nations did this. Instead of everyone going out to battle, let's save a lot of bloodshed. You send your best soldier, we'll send our best soldier, we'll fight. And to the victor goes the spoils, the victor. So remember, if you look at the wording between David and Goliath, it was that whoever wins that battle, the losing nation will become the slaves to the victor. So the Malbim says that the servants of Achish assumed that, why is David here? He's here to claim his prize. He slew Goliath, which means, again, we are technically his servants. He is here to claim his kingdom. Halo ze yanu shenis b'mecholos lemar. Fine. So 24. So what happens? I'm sorry. A couple of years. It's just a couple of years. It's a relatively short amount of time. It's not a rational argument, but remember, they're trying to figure out, what is he doing here? Right, it's so strange that he's showing up alone. Maybe it could be that's the greatest demonstration of strength, to come without an army, to come to say, you know, I am the king here. I claim this kingdom as my own because I want it fair and square. I don't know, but remember, they are reaching because it's such a strange sight to see the most powerful, popular man in the kingdom of Israel showing up by himself in Gat, in hostile territory.
It's very strange that he didn't disguise himself.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, understand, it's quite possible that he assumed people wouldn't recognize him. Remember, a couple of years have already gone by. He's matured. Maybe he's grown a beard or whatever. I don't know. Of course, he had a beard. That's the show, right? And long payas, right? So again, I don't know what he looked like. You know, I would guess that he assumed they wouldn't recognize him because as much as David is in a rush to get out of Eretz Yisrael, I can't imagine that he wouldn't have taken the necessary steps to disguise himself in some way. But either way, his cover's blown. They recognize him. But so what happens? It does, right, although it doesn't mention anything about the sword is easy enough to cover up, but again, somehow they recognize him through the sword, through his looks, whatever it is. So 24. So now what happens? So Nebuchadnezzar, David HaMelech, has just run away from Nov because he realizes that he's within the reach of Shaul. He runs to Gat, thinking that kind of in Gat, he could just go ahead and blend in. No one's going to find him. No one's going to ask him. Remember, Gat was also historically a big commercial center. So there are people always coming to Gat. So, okay, he'll just blend in. No one's going to see anything. Now what happens? They discover him. So what happens? 24. Vayosem David es hadvarim ha'ele bilvavo. So word, somehow David finds out that people know who he is and that he's in Gat. Vayira ma'od mipnei Achish melech Gat. Now, at this point in time, when David realizes that they know who he is, now he's in big trouble. Because remember, at least in Nov, he was amongst his own, and he enjoyed the support of the people. So even had something happened, he could have always relied on some individuals to come to his aid. Now, he's in enemy territory. He's in Philistine territory. And not only that, he killed their most valiant warrior. David HaMelech is frightened. You know, what's interesting to note is that there are only a few times that the Navi records the emotion of fright by David HaMelech. Take note that it's here. And we're going to discuss why it's here in just a little bit. Well, it's obvious why it's here, but we'll discuss a deeper meaning as to this fright as well. Vayira, number 25, the Radak, Biyud, Eitin Levad, Biyud HaShorsh, Nigra Minak Mikhtav, Vayira Miparav, Shol Yargu, Kihu Hari Giborim V'Kama Mehem. Remember what the Radak points out. It's not just that David killed Goliath. David killed, over the course of his career, many, many plishtim. So, you know, I would assume you walk into any Philistine post office and you know, whose face do you see on the wall? Presumably you're going to see King David, or he's not King David, David's face on the wall again. So it's not just Goliath. He's killed so many of their fathers, of their sons, of their brothers. So now he realizes they know who he is. He feels himself to be in mortal danger. What happens? If you look in 26, the Ashik brings in something else. He says, Vayer ma'obne achish, u'ma gam la'omrim, ki achi galias haya, v'inkom nikmaso. There's another opinion, another medrash that says that the king of Gat Achish was the brother of Goliath. So not only has David killed their most important warrior, but David has literally killed a member of the royal family, a brother of the sitting monarch. So David HaMelech is exceptionally free. So what are you going to do now? Remember, to try to run is not necessarily a possibility. Because remember, to run, we don't know where exactly he is in Gat. We don't know exactly how far in he is. But the point is, he can't rely on outrunning the Philistine forces. Not only that, but remember, where is he going to run to? At this point in time, he has no idea what's happening in Nov. Remember, what is happening in Nov? What's happening in Nov? Doeg goes back, tells Shaul that the city of Nov are aiding and abetting the man who is trying to steal your kingdom. And Shaul comes back and slaughters the entire city of Nov. One Kohen escapes from Nov. The entire city of Nov is slaughtered. So where is David going to go? What is he going to do? To run back to Eretz Yisrael? I have no idea what's happening in Eretz Yisrael now. To run to another nation? What am I supposed to do? So listen to this. So 27, and now we finally come to our capital. Vayishano es ta'amo. He changed his speech. He changed his speech. Be'inehem. Vayisholel bi'adam. Vayisav al dasos hashar. Vayored riro el zikano. What did he do? Literally, vayishol bi'adam means he started flailing with his hands. He scribbled on the doors of the gate and let his saliva run down his beard. Or in other words, what did David HaMelech do? He acted crazy. He acted like he was insane. Look at 28, says the Radak, Vayishan es ta'amo, Shina es divaro, es diburo. Really, he went ahead and he changed his speech. Vidato, and his thought, well, da'ato means his intellect, be'inehem, kidi shi yisnak elohem, v'lo yachshuv alav shehu David, o kidi laharos atzmo shota be'inehem, v'lo yachoshu alav v'yigrushu meheichal ha'melech v'yilechlo. So there are one of two possibilities that he could pull off with this. If he feigns insanity, either A, they'll say, that can't be David, right? That can't be him. We must be mistaken. Looks like him, but it's not David. Or even if it is David, what will they say? Well, they'll say, Nebuch. like the guy's, unfortunately, he's just mentally unstable. What are we going to do? We're going to kill him, we're going to execute him, meaning he's a shell of his former self. So either again, to try to get them to think that either it's not David, or even if it is David, again, he's such a broken man already, there's no need to take any kind of revenge on him. So watch this. Vayomer, number 29. Vayomer Echash Alavadav. Hine tiru ish mishtageya. Lama taviu osas. Now what's interesting, based on what Achish said, is it appears that they actually brought David before the king. They arrested him, they brought him before the king. So what happens? So David HaMelech is standing there, he's drooling, flailing, talking nonsense, doing all this kind of stuff, and Achish says to them, why do you bring this crazy man before me? Right? Why are you bringing him here? The Mitzudas David says in number 30, Hinei tiru, halo re'isim shu'ush meshuga. Right? He's crazy. V'David halohu maskil imkein ein zed David. So according to the Mitzvah David, Achish says, it can't be the same guy. It can't be the same person. The David we know was a skilled warrior. The David we know was a smart man. So this guy is Nebuch. He's out of his mind. So you can't. Must be you have mistaken identity. 31. And look what Achish says. This is actually quite funny. Chuser mishugaim ani. Do you think that I don't have enough crazy people in my own palace already? Do you think I need another lunatic, another crazy person in my palace? They are literally all over the place. Why are you going ahead and bringing, now you're importing lunatics, right? Now you're importing crazy people. I don't need him here. Get him out of here. So now we understand. Go back to number one. So now what happens? Says David HaMelech, LeDavid. David HaMelech composed this particular capital, Bishanoso est ta'amo, Lifnei Avimelech. So now we understand, in a very dramatic way, the historical context of this particular capital. The David HaMelech says, compose this, Bishanoso es ta'amo, when literally he feigned insanity, Lifnei Avimelech. Either because, like we saw before, either because Avimelech is the generic term for Philistine rulers, or because David, in part of a display of craziness, went ahead and kept calling Achish Avimelech. Either way, this capital was said by David when he was saved from these circumstances by feigning insanity. Meaning, you have to understand something. This is an incredible miracle, because why didn't they think to themselves, or maybe he's just feigning insanity, right? Maybe he's just playing a game on us because he realizes that he's cornered. So yeah, I'm saying clearly he did a good job at it, but even more than a good job, David HaMelech realized it was absolute siyata d'shmaya. There was no way that he could have fully, literally he was face to face with the King of God. And I'll take even a step further. Even if he was feigning insanity, let's say they knew it was David feigning insanity, what should they have done? Kill him anyway. Right, kill him anyway. Just avenge all of that Philistine blood. The fact that Achish is so dismissive and say, listen, I don't need another nut, right? I don't need another lunatic. I don't need another crazy person in my palace. And was just willing to literally let him go and send him away. That's miraculous. So miraculous that David HaMelech goes ahead and writes a capital dedicated to this particular event. Now, before we go ahead, and so now, based on that, you'll understand the rest of the theme and the tone of the capital. Because the rest of the theme of the capital is what? That there are times in life that we are absolutely helpless. There are times in life where we don't have any options, and yet what, if we have proper emunah, if we have proper belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God delivers. God provides salvation. And now we understand the context. Because David HaMelech is standing in the Philistine palace, right in front of the King of Gath. He has absolutely no options at his disposal. There is no hishtadlus. There's nothing he could do to extricate himself from these difficult circumstances. The best he could do is feign insanity. I did my part. I did whatever I could do in these circumstances. Ribono shel Olam, you came through for me once again. Yes? To get away from Eretz Yisrael. Just to get away. Remember, it's the closest neighboring kingdom. So he just went. He didn't choose Gath for any particular reason other than it was the closest area to him where he was outside of Eretz Yisrael. But let me show you something very interesting. If you take a look at number 32, there's another very important theme that comes out of this that we're going to see in the capital as well. So this is from a Sefer Oz Melech. That's written by Rav Yigal Ariel. Rav Ariel is a Rosh Yeshiva, Vishivat Hester in Chispin. And he has a whole number of volumes on Nach. Really exceptional svarim. So he writes the following. He says, Mishanikra hakera muchrach tavil himalit. As soon as things begin to unravel, David HaMelech has no choice but to run. Remember again, when does David realize that things have gone south? When does he realize? That no, even before. When does David realize that he has to run? What event told me I had to run? No, earlier. Remember, he realizes it because his father-in-law, Shaul, had placed guards outside of his home. And the next meeting, no matter how much problems you have with your in-laws, right? You know, hopefully, again, they're not stationing anyone outside your house, right? So David HaMelech realizes my father-in-law is stationing guards right outside of my house, and their orders were when David comes out in the morning, kill him. Those were the orders. I mean, the orders were technically arrest and bring him to the palace, but it was like, wink, wink, you know, if he doesn't make it to the palace, it's okay also. So David realizes that at that moment, now he's got to run. No choice but to run. So Mishanikra Kara Mukhtav Limalit. Vuborech Linov, Afshizu Eina Omedis Bimaslo Bricha. So the Eino Makul Matim Lehitstaitus. And now remember, he goes to Nov. Now Nov is not the best place to go for one simple reason. We saw. It doesn't have weapons. And Dunmach must have realized that in some way. And what else didn't it have? Right? Food. Right? If you're not a Kohen, the menu options in the city of Nov are exceptionally limited. So logically, it wasn't the best place to go. Now, why David HaMelech chooses it? Because David HaMelech figured if there's going to be a place that perhaps, again, will know the least about what is happening between me and my father-in-law, this is probably the place. David Odeno, second paragraph of number 32. David Odeno Navuch Umechapes Es Dako. David is confused and is trying to find. Remember, David HaMelech doesn't know what to do. On one hand, as was mentioned before, he was anointed by Shmuel. He was declared as king. That's wonderful. On the other hand, my father-in-law, and now he's going to rally his army behind him, are setting out. Can we remember? We know how the story progresses. Shaul mobilizes every possible resource to hunt down David. They spend more time hunting down David than they do battling their actual enemies. David doesn't know what to do. He says, "Hupona l'shnei kivunim minugadim bilti efsharim ubilti mitzuatim." So David HaMelech has two possibilities that are polar opposite options. Michad, shuv bericha el Hashem. So on one hand, he has the ability to go ahead and run to God. Kibrichaso berishona el Shmuel. So Rav Ariel writes, why does David go to Nov? Why go to Nov? If it doesn't have weapons, and if it doesn't have a real food supply for non-Kohanim, why does he go to Nov? Because going to Nov represented a running to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's where the Aron was, it's where the Mishkan was, it's where the Kohanim resided. It represented running into the protective embrace of God. Where do you go if you don't know where to go in life? Where do you go when man has betrayed you? Where do you go when you don't know who could you rely on? You go to your rock, you go to your Redeemer, you go to the constant, you run back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he goes to Nov, Shuv Bricha Al Hashem, Shnov Hier Miklat. It's interesting, Nov was also an Ir Miklat, a city of refuge, which meant, again, if someone, God forbid, killed another accidentally, that is where they would go for refuge. The city of refuge, he says, it was a city, it was an island, it was an oasis of tranquility in the strong stream of life. Elish Elish David Motzei Shamas Doeg. Of course, one problem. David goes there to find God, to find a little bit of tranquility, security, and instead Doeg is there. Misbarelo shegam Nov eino michutz lemisgeret. So according to Rav Ariel, which according to many Mefarshim, David knew that Doeg was there, and he realizes that when he sees Doeg, he realizes now that Nov is not going to fit either. Even in Nov, there's no safety, there's no security. And he realizes after that, he realizes that all of Eretz Yisrael is within the web of Shaul. Mishenichsam kivon zeh, when now David HaMelech realizes that there is no safety and tranquility or peace in Eretz Yisrael, he goes to the other option. What's the other option? Plishtim. Right? Plishtim, what's the choice? It's either find refuge in Israel or find refuge outside of Israel. There's no refuge in Israel because, again, as we've seen already, even Doeg is in the city of Nov. He goes to the Plishtim. Shuv kivun kitzoni biltiri ali. Ubilti efshari. Rav Ariel says, David did not think this through. He did not think it through. Because what did he think was going to happen? What did he think? David HaMelech is looking for a safe haven. He's looking for tranquility. He's looking for peace. Remember, David HaMelech, you have to understand something. What is David HaMelech ready to do? What is he really ready to do in order to avoid conflict? He's ready to just simply fade into a life of obscurity. So meaning, if I could go to Nov and kind of hide among the Kohanim, I'm happy to. If I could go to Gat and just hide among the Plishtim, I'm happy to just simply fade into obscurity. Rav Ariel says, there's no plan going on over here. What's the plan? There's a simple plan. The plan is to run. The plan is to run with absolutely no idea as to where or what you're running into. David Od Yilamid. Look what Rav Ariel writes. Because David HaMelech, right now, he has a simple plan. The plan is run, 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 run. Where? I don't know. I don't know exactly, but I just have to keep running. So Rav Ariel writes, David Od Yilamid, Shi'i Afshar Livroach Min HaMetzius. David HaMelech is going to very quickly learn that you can't run from your realities. Alav Lashuv al Toch Mizgeret HaChaim. David HaMelech is going to join back into the framework of life. Lif'ol u'liskadim bisocha, to work, to struggle, and to try to advance his life. Ad shi'agia el anhan hagasa. So Rav Ariel says something amazing. That what you understand, of course, that Navi is not just simply stories. Navi is also moral, ethical lessons. Rav Ariel says, what's unfolding over here? What are we to learn from this story? Is David HaMelech doing the right thing or the wrong thing? Rav Ariel says, unequivocally the wrong thing. David HaMelech's entire plan is to run. So again, says, right, you know what this is a matter? David HaMelech has a life problem. So how does David HaMelech choose to deal with this problem? To run away from it. And what happens when you try to run away from your problems? Right? They follow you wherever you go. You could run. Maybe by running, you'll gain a little bit of respite. Maybe by running, you'll get a little bit of rest. Maybe you can lay low for a little while. But your problems will always catch up with you. So he runs to Nov. Guess who's there? Doeg. He runs ultimately to Gat. They recognize him. David, you can't run. And what we're going to see is one of the dominant themes in this capital is this notion that in life, it's all about confrontation. You know, it's interesting. I mentioned this actually in my Wednesday night Parsha Shir and last week in Parsha's Vayishlach. So there's a very interesting idea that we know, fascinatingly enough, that Yaakov prepared in three ways to go ahead and meet Esav, right? What are the three ways? Good. So he prepares through prayer, he prepares through gifts, and he prepares for war. How does he prepare for war? By splitting the camps, right? So Yaakov has a very important plan. Look, he doesn't know what's going to happen with Esav. So he decides to split the camps, right? And this way, again, even if Esav attacks one of the camps, v'haya machaneh ha'nisharas lifleita, the other camp will be okay. There's only one intriguing detail, which is the Torah never says that Yaakov Avinu split the camps. It says he was going to do it, but yet again, when we read about the encounter with Esav, who's there? Who's there? Everyone. So what happened? Like, where did the plan go? So there's an amazing idea that's unfolding over here. To appreciate this, for those who were at the Parsha Shir last week, I apologize for the repetition, but it's a little bit of good review. So remember, again, the most incredible event of last week's Parsha was Yaakov Avinu's struggle with the Ish. Right, such a strange episode. Yaakov Avinu is alone at night. Not immediately clear why he's alone at night, but he's alone at night. And what does the Torah say? Va'yavek ish imo adalos ha-shachar. A man struggles with Yaakov Avinu until the morning. Who was the man? Who was the man? Okay, so Rashi quotes the Medrash that it was Sarosh Shal Esav. Interestingly, you know, Rabbi Sachs has a beautiful essay where he writes that the man is actually the Ribono Shel Olam. It was God. And he brings proofs set from the fact that Yaakov named the place Piniel. I faced God here. In any way, it doesn't really matter. The point is, it's either God or it's an angel. Somebody is struggling with Yaakov Avinu throughout the entire night. What's the obvious question? Why? Why? The Torah doesn't tell us why is there a struggle. What is the issue? I understand why Esav might struggle with Yaakov. There might be a struggle for wealth. There might be a struggle for power. There might be a struggle for familial standing. But why is this Ish, either this angel or God, going ahead and struggling with Yaakov? What is the point of the struggle? Look at the Rashbam in number 33. The Rashbam is Rashul ben Eir, is the grandson of Rashi. The Rashbam writes something absolutely amazing. Vayivasa Yaakov levado kilomar sheheevir kol ha'shalo. You see, you know what's interesting? Everyone assumes that what was happening, you know, where did Yaakov cross the Yarden? Mavar Yabok. You know, what's interesting, if you drive down the Jordan Valley Road, so there's a place that's called Mavar Yabok. I don't know if that's the biblical Mavar Yabok. I don't know if that's actually Yaakov Avinu or that general area. It's quite amazing. So we always have this image. So what's happening? Yaakov is crossing from Chutz La'aretz, from outside the land of Israel, into the land, and he's crossing over the Jordan. So we have this image that what's happening over that night, he's crossing everyone and everything over from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. He's coming into the land. And what happens? Everyone and everything is across. And Yaakov Avinu is left on which side? The Chutz La'aretz side, but he's going to cross over. Says the Rashbam, that's not what happened. Says the Rashbam, you know what happened that night? Yaakov Avinu has a change of heart. And he decides, I am not going to confront Esav. He decides, I'm going to run. I'm going to run. You know what? It's too dangerous. It's not worth it. I'm going to run. So what does he do that night? He's crossing everyone back out of Eretz Yisrael. See, he's crossing everyone back over the Jordan outside to avoid confrontation with Esav. And what happens? And says the Rashbam, he says, everyone's crossed over, and Yaakov Avinu is left alone on the Eretz Yisrael side of the Yarden. And what happens? It's at that moment that the Ish begins to struggle with him. Why? Look at the second line of the Rashbam. So Yaakov is going to run. Why does the Ish struggle with him? Last line of the Rashbam. Vayavik malach imo shelo yuchal livroach. Amazing. Why does the Ish struggle with Yaakov Avinu the entire night? Why? Why? To prevent him from running. to prevent it from running. And that's why you ever wonder, why does the struggle go on the entire night until the morning? I get the point. Struggle for an hour, for 2 hours, everybody's tired. Why does it have to go until the morning? And the answer is that the Ish struggled with Yaakov Avinu until it was too late for Yaakov to run. Until Yaakov had no choice but confrontation. That's why, again, Yaakov Avinu never splits the camps. Why does he never split the camps? Because splitting up the camps was a strategy for engagement, was a strategy for confrontation. Yaakov Avinu did not intend to confront. He intended to run. He intended to run. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo ba'atzmo, or the Malach, whoever it is, steps in and prevents Yaakov Avinu from running. You have to confront. Now, interestingly enough, remember, what's Yaakov's modus operandi, right? What does Yaakov Avinu do? How does Yaakov Avinu deal with conflict and difficulty? He runs, right? Now, remember, his running began the first time. The first time, the truth is, it was his mother who told him to run, but he nevertheless ran. He left home. He ran to Haran. Then when Lavan becomes a little bit more aggressive and it's time to go out and take his whole family, how does he leave Lavan's home? How does he leave Lavan's home? Under the cover of darkness, right? Again, he steals away. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is telling Yaakov Avinu, this is not an approach to life. You have to confront. You have to deal. Everybody has challenges. Everybody has difficulties. And if you think you could outrun your difficulties, you are sadly mistaken. Klal Gadol in life is your difficulties are always more physically fit than you are. Your difficulties could always run faster, have more stamina, and have more endurance than you have. Wherever you go, wherever you hide, your difficulties and your challenges will always find you. And therefore, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yaakov, stand tall, stand firm, and face your challenges. Does it mean that you're not going to get hurt? Does it mean you're not going to be injured? Does it mean you won't be handicapped? No, it doesn't mean that. Sometimes, again, you get really hurt when you face your challenges head on. But the only way to advance yourself in life is not to run. The only way to advance yourself in life is not to cower, is not to hide. You have to confront. And really, as we're going to see, what is true for Yaakov Avinu is true for David HaMelech as well. LeDavid b'shanoso es ta'amo lifnei Avimelech v'yagasheu v'yelach. We will see, it's not just a psalm of thanksgiving that David HaMelech sang to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when God really stepped in and allowed his lunatic behavior to be believable by Achish and by his ministers. But David HaMelech, we're going to see, is singing a song over here of confrontation. I learned something very important from this episode, that I thought I could outrun my problems, but in reality, I realized that my problems could always outrun me. And therefore, what I learned from my confrontation with Achish, the king of Gath, is to be able to have the courage to be able to confront, the courage to be able to go ahead and deal with, the courage to be able to tackle my challenges head on. I might not be able to solve them. I might not be able to overcome them. They still may best me. But at the end of the day, if I hope to reach any resolution, I have to have the courage to stand my ground, knowing that if I have the courage to tackle my challenges head on, the Ribbono Shel Olam will always be by my side to help me with that. Because if there's one thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu admires about us more than anything, besides our honesty, it's our courage. It's our ability to confront. It's our courage. It's our ability to go in and tackle things head on. It's our ability not to run or to cower in fear. LeDavid b'shanosos ta'amolif na'ari melech was David's thanksgiving song for Ashkacha, for the divine providence of stepping in and helping his ruse actually be believed by Achish and his ministers. And it's also going to be David HaMelech's statement of declaration that the only approach in life is confrontation. All right, we'll stop over here. And Meretz Hashem will pick up again with Kapitel Lamed Daled next week.